From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
In Old California.
Santa Clara.
I'm from Fremont.
Pacifica, California.
Pleasanton.
Oh. From Vallejo.
Me from Antioch.
Coming up, we'll visit a tech program that's trying to put a new face on Silicon Valley.
If you walk into your average hackathon, they're usually too white, too male, or too unhealthy.
Then we'll talk with a group that's opening up tech to young women of color.
We're seeing them take the interest that we plant the seed in our classes and take it far beyond what we ever anticipated.
And we meet some girls who are learning to be superstars at math.
When you have a hard math problem, you have to really think hard. And when you get the idea, you're like, oh, I got it.
We got it, too, today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. When President Obama launched the My Brother's Keeper initiative in 2014, he said he hoped it would help those who faced the legacy of being left behind.
There are some Americans who, in the aggregate, are consistently doing worse in our society. Groups that have had the odds stacked against them in unique ways that require unique solutions. Groups who've seen fewer opportunities that have spanned generations. And by almost every measure, the group that is facing some of the most severe challenges in the 21st century, in this country, are boys and young men of color.
Here in the Bay Area, Kino Labs answered the president's call with an event called the My Brother's Keeper Hackathon. It's an intensive weekend challenge for young men of color to build mobile applications and websites that help their communities. They're taking these hackathons on the road across the country, starting right here in Oakland. KALW's Olivia Cueva met a few of the hackers and brings us this story.
George Hofstetter and Giovanni Vieira have a problem. They don't always feel safe when they're walking down the street. For 14-year-old Hofstetter, who lives in Oakland and repairs computers in his spare time, it's because of the police.
I feel more nervous than a typical Caucasian American would.
Hofstetter's black, and statistics support his nervousness. A recent review of Oakland police stops found that they're 4.5 times more likely to stop African Americans than whites. 17-year-old Vieira is more worried about the local gangs in his neighborhood. He lives near Stockton, and recently, strangers attacked him on his way home.
Two people down the street, minorities like myself. One bumps into me. He asks, "Where are you from?" I don't respond because I know if I do respond, it's not going to be the right response he wants. They kept beating me and beating me, and the only reason they stopped was because they heard police sirens.
So this weekend, he and Hofstetter teamed up to build a mobile app that will address both of these issues. They're calling it Cop Stop.
The goal is for teenagers like ourselves to be able to pull out their phones if they see a police officer or a group of kids over there that you may see as suspicious. And you want to whip out your phone and look at the little quick tips and advice on how to handle that.
Or even take a look at the map and take a look at your urban area and see where hotspots are for gang-related events.
Hofstetter and Vieira only met 2 days ago, on the first day of the My Brother's Keeper Hackathon in downtown Oakland. Since then, they've been working with a team of professional designers and coders in an abandoned office on the fourth floor of the Kaiser Building. By 8 a.m. on the last day, they're already busy at work.
It's not going to let me go into the Empowerful like it did yesterday. It says I need to...
Tonight, the Cop Stop team will present their project to a panel of judges. One of the winning prizes is a summer tech internship in Mayor Libby Schaaf's office. And Hofstetter has his eye on it.
When I first went to the hackathon last year, I couldn't see myself being a coder. But now, for the past year, I've really gotten into it and I hope to major in computer science at UCLA.
That's just what Kalima Pryforce is hoping to hear. He's founder and CEO of Kino Labs, the company that organized this competition.
Hackathons have been around for quite some time throughout Silicon Valley and Ivy League institutions, but if you walk into your average hackathon, they're usually too white, too male, or too unhealthy.
So Kino focuses on diversifying. The company connects tech professionals with low-income black and brown youth. Pry Forest calls these youth trailblazers.
Trailblazers are young people ages 12 to 20. They are predominantly low opportunity youth, or we say high potential youth in low opportunity settings.
Pry Forest was a trailblazer himself. He grew up in a group home in Brooklyn, New York. He remembers the experience as very isolating. He didn't even get to go to the library.
And so one of the first things I did when I was 8 years old was that I had a hunger strike, a three-day hunger strike against my group home in order to get more books into the group home.
It worked. Now, he says that one of the first things he learned how to hack was his own isolation.
If you want to look at what really makes someone poor, especially in this country, it's their lack of access to resources, their lack of access to knowledge, their lack of access to those who may be able to elevate their life and improve their life outcomes.
Pry Forest sought out those people and by age 16 had founded his own tech company. But he knows that kids can't always do that. Many of their schools can't keep up with new technologies, and their communities may not have resources to help them excel. But, he says, their circumstances make them great problem solvers.
They wake up every day learning how to, knowing how to solve a problem. And so why not just have them solve problems related to technology and coding and engineering and mathematics? And that's what essentially what Keno does.
At 4 p.m., people start to fill the large auditorium. The judges sit near the edge of the stage. Teams of youth, some as young as 8, walk in with their mentors, all wearing specially made blue long-sleeve shirts with Keno logos on the front.
Hello, everyone. So you've seen some amazing things so far.
Group after group takes to the stage. There are apps that will fund computers for low-income youth, improve young women's self-esteem, and make children's books free and digitally accessible.
Give it up to Team Sparkle, guys. Thank you for coming out.
Towards the end of the event, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf takes to the podium. She says she feels inspired, but also a little depressed.
The idea that our young people need an app to navigate interactions with the police, that says something to me, that we in government need to fix some things.
The judges seem to agree.
Best impact. No suspend. And top stop.
It's not first prize, but Vieira and Hofstetter will receive a scholarship to a business accelerator program that will help them see their idea through. Then, Pry Forest gives out the final award for Outstanding Trailblazer, the one who will get the internship with Mayor Schaaf.
For right now, that Outstanding Trailblazer is, drum roll, George Hofstetter.
Hofstetter walks to the stage with his mouth open, completely in shock.
This is awesome. Thank you so much from everyone. Thank you.
The excitement doesn't die down. After the event, people are hugging, laughing, and exchanging contact info. Hofstetter and Vieira are congratulated from left to right. One of their mentors gave them each brand new MacBook laptops on the condition that they code every day. Vieira doesn't have a backpack, so he carries his in a brown paper bag and hugs it closely to his chest. When I check in a few weeks later, he says he hasn't been able to code. He doesn't have Wi-Fi at his house, so it's hard to get the work done. Problems like this means he's not sure he'll pursue tech, but he says he's grateful for the opportunity. Meanwhile, Hofstetter says he's been coding every day, and he wants to make CopStop public by this summer, so both his and Vieira's work can help other people like them. For Cross Currents, I'm Olivia Cueva.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The tech industry isn't just lacking in people of color, it's also a male-dominated space. Electrical engineer and computer programmer Kimberly Bryant says when she was in college, she was one of only a few women and the only Black woman in her graduating class. When she had her own daughter, Kai, she wondered what she could do to get more young girls of color into the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. The answer came in April 2011. Bryant launched a company called Black Girls Code to teach girls how to build their own websites, make computer games, and train them for careers in the tech industry. I sat down to talk to Kimberly Bryant and her daughter, Kai, who's been through the program.
I think some of the same challenges that I face as a woman, I face as a woman of color. And I think the race piece as an extra bit of a complexity to my journey as an engineer in the field of technology. So isolation and being in this field that's dominated by white males can be intimidating to people of color that are going into the field of technology for the first time. I think the lack of exposure in our communities and underrepresented communities to this field, there's not going to be a lot of computer scientists in the inner city neighborhood as your next door neighbor. For the most part, you just don't see our kids that are coming through these underrepresented neighborhoods and inner cities and in areas where they don't have access to lots of Stanford's not next door or there's no one that really is in the field of technology. That lack of exposure plays a part because they don't even know that it's a thing. So most of the kids that are coming through our programs, they don't know what computer science is when they come into our first class. They don't know what it is to build a website and how they get an app on their phones that they're using on a day-to-day basis. So not knowing is half of the problem that we see with our kids.
So you were inspired by your daughter.
Yes.
Your daughter is here with us.
She is.
Hi, Kai.
Hi.
So, are you part of this because your mother is an engineer? Is it in your blood? Tell me about what subjects you liked in school and what do you like?
Well, from early age, I had an affinity, I guess you could call it, for technology and video games. I just played them all day, and my mom obviously wasn't too happy about that because she didn't like me being such a consumer of other people's things and of their products. She wanted to see me being my own entrepreneur and making my own games.
And so is that primarily one of the ways that you bring the girls in? And is it expected that they then stay in this industry, or can they then, like, do you give them the tools to branch out into other fields within tech?
Yes. So we try to introduce the girls to all different phases of technology. So we do web design. We do mobile app development. We do game design. We're just starting to get into robotics and more of the electronic side of technology. But we really try to introduce them to as many facets of the industry as possible, because we're not really sure what's going to tap into what girls' interests, and we want to make sure they know everything there is that's available to them. We really try to build these classes around their interests. So they're into web. They like to spend time on the web. They like mobile. They like fashion. They like art. They like gaming. And so really building our workshops around those things that they already like is kind of the hook that gets them excited. So we're saying, oh, well, you know how you play this game? Now you can create one. And that really gets them like all in, where they really take it far beyond what we teach in classes. So I have girls that are in our program that we taught them, say, an introductory course in Scratch, that are now learning to do more complex game design on Unity, which is another professional platform that gamers use. I have girls that are building mobile app sites at their home and putting in them the Google Play Store, putting in them the iTunes Store. I have girls that are doing robotics, and we just do a little robotics at Black Girls Code, but they've done things on their own. So we're seeing them take the interest that we plant the seed in our classes and take it far beyond what we ever anticipated.
Do you think, coding means literacy today? And if you don't code, then you will be left behind.
I often hesitate to say that everyone should learn to code, and it is the same as what we would consider basic reading literacy. But it is an important literacy for our youth of today because technology touches everything. So no matter if they want to go into the arts, if they want to go into medicine, if they go into a more scientific career, in each of those, they will be utilizing technology in some form or fashion in the course of their work. So it's critically important that they at least understand the language and understand how to communicate in that language to the folks that are working around them to do their jobs and to get their jobs and their goals done in their careers. So it is a critical literacy that our kids must learn, but not the only one. It doesn't replace the basic reading, writing, and arithmetic in my book, but it is a necessary addition to the skill sets that we need to empower our youth with.
So I'm not a girl anymore. I'm a woman, Kai, and I don't know how to code. Is it easy to learn?
It depends on what you start with. I mean, obviously, you can't go like straight into some hardcore Python, probably, unless you go
Python.
Really, really slow or something like that. But you just have to just maybe, if you want to learn it on your own, just look up some tutorials, and they should be pretty straightforward. And many misconceptions that my friends have and many people I know have is that coding's too hard, I can't do it, it's only for smart people. Mm. But that's not the truth, because you are smart, they are smart, and you can do it just like anyone else can. You were just as good as them, they went through the same struggles, and they started at the beginning just like you are if you're going to learn how to code.
That was Kimberly Bryant and her daughter Kai talking about Black Girls Code, a company designed to get more young women of color into STEM fields. They're having a Build a Game in a Day workshop this Saturday. Details are at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We just heard about a program that teaches young women coding and tech. And to do that, it helps to have a solid foundation in the original code, mathematics. While it's common for high school students to get math tutors, some parents who can afford it are starting to pay for their girls to get extra attention in math at much younger ages. Though consistently, girls do better in school than boys in every subject, they're still underrepresented in STEM industries. That's science, technology, engineering, and yes, math. A group of parents in Berkeley want to reverse that trend for their daughters. They have a strategy that they hope might make it into the classroom, making math fun. Youth Radio's Savannah Robinson sent us an audio postcard from an after-school play group called Supergirl Math.
Like any playgroup, this group of second graders gathers at a friend's house in Berkeley. As each girl arrives, she takes her shoes off, throws her backpack down, and sprints off to join her giggling friends. Their teacher/playmate, Henri Ducharme, sits quietly on the rug. Everyone sits down in a circle and pulls out an abacus. You know those ancient calculating tools with beads?
I have a weird question now.
Ducharme tells them to form the number 28 on the abacus, and then gives them this problem.
How much would you have to add there to get to 99?
I know. This would be 99, and we have this.
That's all your 99.
I'm starting to hear 71.
72.
Oh, or I'm starting to hear 72.
I just added up some random stuff in my head and I got to 99.
Here's where the fun happens. When the girls get it all wrong.
Can you see, in a kind of a hidden way, can you see the 71 there? Look at it.
This isn't a math tutorial. No hard tests, no flashcards, not even desks. Ducharme's teaching style doesn't lend itself to a classroom environment. That's by design. He teaches math to kids under sixth grade in private lessons and after-school classes.
Doing math for me is like playing around on the play structure at school.
Oh, yeah.
Can anyone else tell me how you think playing on the play structure might be like doing math?
Sometimes when you step onto a play structure, like, I really want to have fun, be creative, and play with my friends.
That's 7-year-old Gemma Ross.
But when you're in math, you can feel the same way if you really want to get into math and get it done. And feel proud about it.
Gemma says, I don't get the question. You're right, because it's a really weird, backwards question.
Wait, I get it. There's no answer to it.
Problem solving for me means trying to solve a math problem where you don't already know how to do it. How to do it is following an algorithm, following a rule. That's the thing that schools teach very well. And what, honestly, I'm not very interested in teaching.
That's fine for the parents of these girls, who treat it like any other fun after-school activity. Apollonia Morrill is the parent who hosts the group's math playdates.
Ours is a family of artists and writers and historians, and we kind of naturally take the kids to activities that are arts, culture, literacy-oriented, art classes, theater, things like that. And I wanted to make sure that my daughter knew that math is important to our family, too.
I never really figured out how to love math. But when I think of math, I think of being bored on a calculator. But to get this kind of experience, these parents are paying $30 a session, like they pay for other extracurricular activities.
16, go.
I wonder if my perspective would be different if I learned to see math as something exciting, like the way 7-year-old Retta Lavender Hill sees it. She says math is like her stretchy bracelet.
When you have a hard math problem, you have to really think hard, and that's when the bracelet is stretched out. And when you get the idea, you're like, oh, I got it. And then you jump sometimes, and then that's when the bracelet goes back together.
Comparing a bracelet to math sounds totally weird, but right in line with how Ducharme wants these second grade supergirls to approach problems as creatively as possible. For Cross Currents, I'm Savannah Robinson.
That story was produced by Youth Radio in Oakland. Now we want to hear what solutions you have to get more women and people of color into tech. Email your ideas to news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter @KALW or call us. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hambrick, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Liz Mack, Marlo McKenzie, Ted Muldoon, Colin Peden, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Sandhya Dirks. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We're connecting the dots between climate change and California's severe drought.
I often get asked, is the drought caused by global warming, or is a particular heat wave caused by global warming?
What's global warming got to do with it? Find out tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by Queen Makeda of Elsa Bronte. She's performing as part of Empress Meditations, an event that will highlight the works of conscious female artists in reggae and world music. Empress Meditations happens this Friday at Ashkenaz in Berkeley starting at 9 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Lay down your guns, blessed be the man.